Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Fantasy Focus Football. They tape every morning, Monday through Friday, live on Twitter. Be sure to check it out if you're interested in the very best analysis of the game, or if you're just ashamed of how you did last year in your own league. You can download and subscribe to Fantasy Focus Football now, as well as The Right Time, wherever you get your podcasts. The Right Time with Bomani Jones podcast is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk about the old quarterbacks that looked old and one who didn't. A little PSA for you football fans to make this season better for you. And also, your stories about doing something dumb like Daniel House. But first... All right, ladies and gentlemen, Cam Newton is back in the NFL. I don't know how good he actually is, to be honest. I saw that he ran for a couple of touchdowns, but I got to say, it ain't seem like he was moving as fast as we were accustomed to, but he's not the youngest dude in the world. That kind of happens. The question for me about Cam is always going to be about the strength of his arm, just like how the shoulder holds up. From what I've been told, the Panthers' concern was they didn't think that arm could make it through a whole season. Is that what's going to happen for the Patriots? I am not sure, but I tell you this. The Patriots look like a whole different, like, situation. The Patriots with Cam Newton there. Like, one thing I don't think the people really did the math on and gave consideration to, we talked a lot about the idea that Tom Brady just wanted to get away from Bill Belichick. He just needed something new. Gabe, is it possible that also the Patriots just needed something new? Because they look like they had a whole lot more fun with Cam out there than they did with Tom Brady out there.
Definitely look like they have a little bit of a spring in their step now, huh?
Man, he was on the sideline with Josh McDaniel, talk about plays, giving pound, and Josh McDaniel out here laughing. We had he handed the ball off to David Andrews, and David Andrews get a spike on. He looked so excited about getting a chance to celebrate in those moments. Like, it's going to be a very interesting situation with the Patriots. Let me tell you something else I noticed too, Gabe. Cam, you know how Tom Brady used to do them interviews on WEEI? Cam is doing those interviews on WEEI now. But you know what that means? That means they can't kill him. Like, when he doesn't play well, they can't go to the places that we would ordinarily assume that that outfit would go to in the midst of Cam Newton not playing at the type of his game. They don't have that option now because they got to stay cool with him. Remember what happened that one time? Didn't they call Tom Brady's daughter a brat or something like that? And everybody had to fall on their swords. Tom Brady came on and said he wasn't going to talk to him no more. And everything else, you know, they don't really have that option now. Cam's on the team now. They kind of got to let that ride out. Now, the other station, that's a completely different situation. But I had been fully expected. Who knew what in the world they were all going to have to say about Cam Newton? Here's my question also, Gabe, about Cam. I don't know if you saw this, but my man John Jones at CBS said that Fanatics had top 2 selling jerseys this offseason were Tom Brady and Cam Newton. Who you think sold more new jerseys in the Boston area? Tom Brady or Cam Newton?
Yeah. I mean, if you can like geolocate where yes. these sales are coming from, which you can obviously because it's online, right?
Yes.
I'd be really interested to see where these Cam jerseys are coming from because it's not like all of them would be coming from Charlotte, right? Like they're Cam fans everywhere.
They're Cam fans everywhere. There are not Patriots fans everywhere though. For all of their success, it is very interesting that they really haven't become like a national brand in that way. Like if the Patriots come play in your city, it's not like, oh, snap, the Patriots fans are in town. They're going to wind up being everywhere. Like somehow it's still a very local brand. And the reason is fairly obvious. They're boring. Like they're not fun. Boring maybe is a little bit of a stretch, but they're not fun. Like people don't enjoy this. If you didn't already root for them, what's bringing you into this? And it is definitely not a multicultural affair. That's not to say that all they fans is white folks. I'm just telling you, I went to that Super Bowl in Atlanta and every jersey that a Patriots fan had on was somebody white. Like I saw one or two Randy Moss jerseys. I saw a Patrick Chung jersey. A Patrick Chung jersey. But that was it. Now, to be fair, I don't even know who the black, we talked about this, I don't know who the black dudes were that the Patriots have had over time other than Randy Moss, whose jersey you would actually want to wear. If he was black, if he was white, or anybody else, they just don't really invest in jersey-worthy black dudes. It's not really their game. It's not how they get down. It's the whitest fan base of any team that you got. Like, the Patriots fan base is the opposite of the Cowboys, where the Cowboys fan base is like the broadest cross-section of America that you're going to find. You go tailgate at AT&T Stadium, and you're going to see America right there. Like, it dawned on me yesterday. I think the only thing that's a broader representation of America than the Cowboys fan base is wrestling fans. It could be anybody that's into wrestling. Never know. I just came up, Gabe, because Luther Vandross, people found out yesterday, apparently was a really big wrestling fan. And people were, like, so surprised that Luther Vandross would be into wrestling. And I'm like, really? You are so surprised that a greasy fat man would be into an athletic competition largely populated by greasy fat men? Like, I don't really know why that would shock you so much. Like, that actually seems to be right in line. You know what I mean? That seems to be what it is. But now, Cam is there with the Patriots. I've noticed that a lot of people have a little bit of a conundrum here. We're trying to figure out how they go feel about Cam with the Patriots, because they largely root for Cam, and they root for Cam in large part, not just because they like him, but because they don't like the people that don't like Cam. But the whole reason that a lot of those people root against the Patriots is the people who don't like Cam are the people who like the Patriots, at least in their minds. You understand what I'm saying? Like, a whole lot of people got to come together on this. There's also, I feel like, a segment of the population that really doesn't like the Patriots, and adding Cam will now just make them really not like the Patriots even more. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like the Patriots are the team of white America. It's plenty of white folks that hate the Patriots, and a lot of them also hate Cam. So now we put that two and two together. We have a fascinating sociological experiment of Cam Newton with the New England Patriots. I would also like to send a shout out to everybody, and I do mean everybody, that was really out here entertaining the possibility that it was a quarterback competition. They really thought that. They really thought that somehow a world was going to come where Brian Hoyer was going to be the quarterback and Cam Newton was going to be on the bench. Jared Stidham was going to be the quarterback and Cam Newton was going to be on the bench if Cam Newton could walk, let alone run. Josh McDaniels ain't necessarily feel like running the ball 42 times, but that's what they're going to do while they got Cam. Why? Because they got Cam, and they beat a team that's not bad. Like, the Dolphins, I don't think any of us think are great necessarily, but they won, like, what, 6 games last year? They're not a bad team. You know, they made some moves, had some people. They're not bad. So it's not like they went out there and beat up on, like, full-on scrubs. I don't know if they beat up on a playoff team, but they didn't beat up on full-on scrubs. So what I feel like the Patriots are out here doing is they got a great defense. And they're going to play great defense, and they're going to hold the ball with Cam. Keep it in mind, they now have the greatest short yardage option in the history of NFL football, and they go pound you, and they go pound you. But my feeling is, as this year goes on, they're going to throw more and more, and they're going to open this thing up more and more as they figure this out, and it's going to be fun to watch. However, that ain't what y'all want to talk about. I know that's not what y'all want to talk about. I know who I am. I know who y'all are. I know what we are. I know what the get down is, right? Y'all want to talk about somebody trying to snatch Cam's chain. Because somebody did, in fact, try to snatch off Cam's chain after the game. Was it Christian Wilkins that tried to snatch his chain? I couldn't tell who exactly it was that tried to do the chain snatching. Why was they so bad? Do we have a great answer for why it is that they were so mad? I didn't get a great handle on why it was that they were so mad. All I got was after the game when Cam Newton said that he realized that he was engaged with somebody who's known for doing the splits. And that's, he'll argue with me. Don't argue with men who do the splits. I had completely forgotten about Christian Wilkins doing the splits after Clemson had won that national championship. That was a pretty impressive athletic feat. Like, that's 300 pounds slamming down instantly. His hip flexors must be the bomb. But I had totally forgotten. And I got to admit, I also would not argue with a man known for doing the splits. We got to draw a line somewhere, baby. It's not where I'm doing it. I don't know what it says about me, to be perfectly honest. You can call me what you want. My only judgment I'm making about Christian Wilkins is he's not a dude I'm going to argue with, because he'd be out here doing the splits. So Cam gave us that. Cam also, before I forget, gave us the Mr. Peanut Color Rush suit. First, I said on TV yesterday that it was the alternate jersey, but nah, I forgot. Mr. Peanut yellow up top, black on the bottom. I thought Mr. Peanut had a black jacket on, but no, he does not. It's just a peanut up top and then the black pants. And so that Cam went to full yellow. So, you know, he had on the Color Rush Mr. Peanut get up. But I got to say, I was surprised that Cam took that chain snatching as well as he did. They were not able to get the chain, by the way. He kept the chain himself. I just thought it was an incredibly bold move. Like, it's one thing to snatch Michael Crabtree's chain when you're Aqib Talib, right? Aqib Talib is always the most ready. They're going to play again, too. I did not see him as being that sort of guy. This wasn't nearly as much fun as when Crabtree and Talib did it, because Talib leaned into it. Like, Talib was so proud of himself for snatching his chain. And the thing with Talib, it made it different, was Talib didn't do it because he was mad. Talib did it because he just felt like it. They lost the game. He's like, I'm going to snatch his chain, right? Because I bet he wanted to beat the Patriots bad, right? He was just salty. Talib was like, no, I'm putting the world the way it should be. I'm putting the world in the right place. World is in the right place when I got Michael Crabtree's chain. And then he tried to snatch Michael Crabtree's chain again, except Crabtree had taped it all. And he still tried to snatch it. Cam ain't about to be out here taping no chain to his neck. He got too much pride for that. That ain't about to happen. But Gabe, it seems that you've done some chain snatching research.
It would appear so. I did find out that chain snatching is a particular type of crime, snatch theft. And the San Jose Police Department has issued advice on their website as to how to avoid snatch theft.
Tell me more.
This first tip sets the line here between Crabtree and Cam in an interesting way. Avoid displaying and carrying large sums of money or valuable jewelry in public.
Smart.
So with Cam, you couldn't exactly see the chain like you would see Crabtree with the chain. Am I right?
Correct.
So there's a difference there. Second one, use the buddy system. If you must walk alone, choose open, well-lit, and well-traveled areas. So out there on the field, you're exposed, right?
Yes.
There's nowhere you can hide. Who's like watching Cam's back and all this?
Well, he was surrounded by people when the chain snatching actually happened. It was just on tilt, right? This is not a wise decision.
Yeah, but somebody's got to be watching Cam's back at all times now. You can't be approaching the king like that.
That's fair. That's fair. That's fair.
Another one, and this is the most important. If you are confronted, cooperate. Give the criminal what he or she asks for. Your life is more valuable than replaceable possessions. Concentrate on remembering a description and call police immediately. Time is of the essence. From the San Jose Police Department.
Now, this is a dilemma, because there's the CeeLo Green premise. You can have it, goddammit, if you want it that bad. There's also what my Uncle Carl told us. Man pulls a gun on you and says he wants to shoot you. Believe him and do whatever it takes to make him not want to shoot you anymore. This is in a very similar place. I went to grad school, my buddy from St. Vincent. He was saying that in the Caribbean, the way the chain snatch game goes, is he said cats would just walk up to you and be like, be cool, man, be cool. You'd be like, what? You'd be like, be cool. What? Bow, snatch your chain. Then keep it going. Like, the decision to snatch your chain has been made. And once you let the person know, they are supposed to just be like, all right, cool, you got the chain. That's the way that it's supposed to go. I guess Cam is a quarterback now. He said the College Park almost came out of him in that moment. College Park is probably a more accurate pronunciation. He said the College Park almost came out of when the dude snatched his chain, which I feel like would happen to anybody else. But I want to talk about a very interesting detail of what you talked about, Gabe. I didn't realize that San Jose cats is getting their chain snatched in San Jose like that. I felt like that would be a place where you could wear your chain safely.
One would assume so. Doing my research, that was the first one that came up, honestly.
Like, does San Jose even have a black part of town? I mean, not that black people are the only ones snatching your chains, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I would say that demographics have probably changed a little bit in the last decade or so. Now it's just kind of like the tech hub.
Well, it's crazy because San Jose has basically 1 million people now. It is 2% black.
San Jose State there.
Which is a very important place in black history for whatever it's worth, right? But like I said, black part of town, I don't want to use black as a like synonym for bad part of town. However, it kind of works out that way in places like that. You know what I mean? Like I do not think about white folks engaging in the chain snatching. I don't know what our Latino brothers do with regards to chains. I just did not think it was such a situation where San Jose needed to put out the APB to everybody to let you know how to stop from getting your chain snatched. The other problem that I think San Jose has there, where they put it out there, they're like, yo, this is what you can do to stop from getting your chain snatched. They don't understand that people have option B on that, which is, oh, I'm going to remember who snatched my chain and I'm going to go find them. Like, I would feel like if I snatched somebody's chain, I couldn't just be walking around. You know what I mean? Like if I, like you walking around with that chain, you might have snatched that chain for me once, but I imagine the anger that's going to build up in whoever that person is. I wouldn't want no parts of that, man. That's going to explode. That's going to blow. That's going to be bad. It's not going to be what's up.
What do you do with this snatched chain other than hold on to it? You can't really wear it because it was broken by virtue of it being snatched, right?
Well, I imagine you could get it repaired. And then at which point, it just depends on what kind of gangster you are. You know, like, are you gangster enough? Like, that's the ultimate disrespect if you're just walking around with it. Or, Gabe, we talked about this before. The other option of what you do once you have somebody's chain is to sell it back to the original owner for a fraction of the original retail. That's the one, is when you try to sell somebody their chain back. There is nothing worse that you can do for your reputation in these streets than buying your chain back. You want to go buy another chain, that's one thing, but you cannot buy that chain back. That chain in the wind. That chain belonged to the streets. This was the weekend of the old quarterback in the NFL. We had old quarterbacks turn up in old places. We had old quarterbacks turn up in new places. We had Tom Brady turn up with the Bucks. We had Phillip Rivers turn up with the Colts. Drew Brees still hanging around in New Orleans looking old. And Ben Roethlisberger last night back off the elbow injury playing for the Steelers. Ben Roethlisberger is the only one of those four that I listed who was coming back off like a for real injury, you know, like, you know, an injury to his elbow, no less, which left with the real question for me, at least about Ben, was like, you know, do you still have it? And it looked like he did. Like, I'm not saying he looked like he was the best quarterback in the NFL last night, but he looked like he still had it. And by the way, Gabe, Ben Roethlisberger is such an old quarterback. Did you see the post-game interview with him?
No, I missed that.
Oh, man, he's gotten so good at, like, faking like he's not Ben Roethlisberger. You know, he's just like, oh, my gosh, my teammates and everything else. He really put on the, I'm so appreciative for everything I have. I'm so blessed to be able to be back playing football, all of that stuff. Like, he really, really, really turned that up in a way where I'm like, partner, I know you. Like, we know you. We done seen your movies. We understand what your get down is. But if he's just decent, they went 8-8 last year with terrible quarterbacks. If he's just decent, they got something going. And what I thought was encouraging about him, if nothing else, was that he was out there, like, you could see that he was doing things that was like, I used to be able to do that and was still able to do them. That had to be the encouraging part for him. Because let me tell you, I watched that game with Tampa Bay and New Orleans, and what I saw from both of those quarterbacks was dudes trying to do things that they used to be able to do that it don't look like they can do anymore. Like, Tom Brady and Drew Brees both looked like finished. There's no way around it. Drew Brees didn't look much better in that game than Dwayne Haskins looked against the Eagles. Like, they looked about the same. And you look at the numbers. The numbers weren't terribly different. And Drew Brees tried to throw the ball down the field. He got to put everything in his six-footish body to get the ball down the field these days. And you started to see that last year. There's a reason why Michael Thomas makes all these catches directly in front of Drew Brees' face. It's not necessarily because Michael Thomas can't go long. It's what's the point of going long if the quarterback can't throw the ball there? Like, they had something yesterday where they said that the biggest gap in targets between number one and number two options on a team was for the Saints. And number one was Michael Thomas, and number two was Ted Ginn. What in the world can Drew Brees do with Ted Ginn? All Ted Ginn does is go run really far and really fast. Drew Brees can't throw the ball far. Drew Brees can't throw the ball fast. Like, he's wild, accurate, and all of that stuff, but he can't get the ball down the field. It just ain't happening. And on the other side, Tom Brady, last year he didn't look especially good getting the ball down the field, but here and there, he could still manage to pull that off. But he looked bad. And I did not realize this. Did you see this game where they said that, you know, he threw that pick six on Sunday? In his last three games, he has thrown three pick sixes. And pick sixes have a lot to do with arm strength. A lot to do with arm strength. Like, the pick six tends to come up on a particular set of routes. And the biggest one that's going to give you that pick six is throwing it late on an out route or throwing it behind a receiver on an out route. Because what happens is, if that dude's running an out, there's nobody else there on the sideline. Like, you got this. And so the cat that is the receiver, he can't be in on the tackle. He's going out. Like, he's not in any position to do anything with this. And so when Brady threw that pass and it's hung inside and that dude was just sitting there on that out route, boom, gone. That's the kind of thing that happens when you lose arm strength. You know,
would you agree that the pick six has the biggest like negative impact on like a quarterback's temperature around success? If a quarterback is throwing pick sixes, they always do that same pan.
Yes.
Get the player running and then let's go back and zoom in on the quarterback's face. And yes. It's always like,
yep.
You know, yep. And it's like now you're getting that look from Brady.
People for some reason think that just because these quarterbacks are not running around all the time, that there's not a decline in athleticism. Right? As though athleticism doesn't matter in throwing a football. It does. It's not something you can just keep doing the way that you used to do it. It's not how it works. And so, yeah, no, that and it's a demoralizer for everybody when that happens. Like, I wonder this about Jameis, because Jameis threw them 30 interceptions last year. If Jameis had thrown those 30 interceptions, but it wasn't 7 pick sixes, how much different does it go over? You know, like how much different is it under those circumstances? And how is that ultimately going to affect the play calling for the Bucs? Like what happens when you realize your quarterback can't throw out routes? How funny will this be if Drew Brees comes out here looking too old this year? If Tom Brady comes out here looking too old this year and both of those teams would be better off with Jameis? You know, he would have got the LASIK. But look, Jameis, for all the mistakes that he made last year, Jameis did a lot good also. There was a high level of production that came from him, right? Like, it wasn't all terrible. I would not be so keen on making him my starter, but if Tom Brady's going to be out here throwing two picks, I don't think he's going to throw two picks every game. But if Tom Brady's going to be doing that, I mean, that was a Jameis game. Two picks, two touchdowns, that's 30-30. That's Jameis Winston. Meanwhile, over there at the Saints, where Taysom Hill makes 16 times the money that Jameis Winston does, he out there watching Drew Brees. It's the opposite of the Jameis experience, right? He's not going to make those mistakes, but it ain't going to be, there's not a high ceiling necessarily on what you're going to be able to get there. Like, it is possible that these teams held on to these old guys because these old guys are the ones to hold on to. And maybe the Saints should have kept Teddy Bridgewater, for example, right? Maybe Tampa should have gone out and gotten somebody else. I don't know, but these dudes look old. And keep this in mind. Did you see Phillip Rivers went out there? All that stuff that we talk about with the Chargers. And, oh, man, Phillip Rivers, he does so much. And then at the end of the game, they always wind up just behind or everything else. Phillip Rivers went up there and had a Phillip Rivers game in his first game with the Colts, right? Had moments where he looked great through those picks. At the end, couldn't put it together. It was basically like we took the Chargers and we moved them up to Indianapolis. That's what it was. That's our next old man quarterback. And I don't know, like, the problem with the Chargers, it wasn't like everybody else. Like, it wasn't like Phillip Rivers was getting betrayed. There is no way in the world, and I don't know how people don't get this, there is no way in the world that the Chargers would ever let Phillip Rivers go if they did not think he was done. They would hold on to him and squeeze out every drop of him that they could. They were legitimately entertaining the possibility of benching him for Tyrod Taylor last year. The streets told you that this dude was done. The people that know him the best told you that this dude was done. And maybe you don't agree that he's done. I think that's fine. But he looked a lot like he looked the last time we saw him. And that, not really encouraging. Not there. So it's wild, man. Ben Roethlisberger is the one coming off the catastrophic injury. He looked all right. Cam Newton coming off the catastrophic injury. He looked all right. Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers, Tom Brady. God, they just look old. That was it. There's no way around it. They just looked old. And what do you do if you're Tampa Bay? Because I don't know if you noticed this game. I tweeted about it. Bruce Arians, I don't know if you saw some of the stuff he said about Brady in the press conference yesterday. He's treating Tom Brady like he's everybody else. Like, Arians got one way to treat people. That's it. I felt like he was kinder to Jameis after interceptions than he was with Tom Brady out there. Right. And maybe I think that's in part because of a recognition that with a black quarterback, you might need to handle things a little bit differently because people are more prone to overreaction. But Arians was like, hey, in practice, he looked like Tom Brady. I don't know why it looked like that in the game. Brady out there yelling at people because they're not in the right place or whatever. No. Last year, think about this. Arians spent a lot of time saying that the interceptions that Jameis was throwing were not necessarily on him. Had to do with people not being in the right places, not fighting for the ball and stuff like that. The interception on the first one, Troy Aikman and Joe Buck were trying to put that on Mike Evans, right? Saying Mike Evans wasn't where he was supposed to be and Tom Brady did all that screaming and everything else. Now, Bruce Arians said, nope, Mike read the coverage and it called for him to stop and Brady didn't throw it to the right place. Like, he put that on him. How is Tom Brady going to deal with that? And on top of that, how are these dudes on the Bucks going to deal with getting screamed at by Tom Brady? Like, it's one thing to make the argument that he's Tom Brady. I get that. But Mike Evans is also Mike Evans. Like, Mike Evans is one of the best receivers in the league. Mike Evans is a Pro Bowler. Chris Godwin went to the Pro Bowl last year. Like, these are men with pride. These are men with their own egos. And these are men who have been successful, at least as individuals, without Tom Brady. They've been successful with Ryan Fitzpatrick and with Jameis Winston, right? They've gotten things done with those dudes. How's that going to go, Tom Brady, keep coming in screaming at them because ain't none of the interceptions his own fault? Like, how's that going to work? Like, I think that people made the assumption that Tom Brady could just jump in and be like, hi, I'm Tom Brady, and then everything goes as it will. Physically, we don't know what he's got, and we got to figure out how he deals with them, because if Bruce Arians is going to be putting this on Tom Brady, his approach is going to have to change. If he's screaming at people during the games, and then after the game, the coach is like, no, it's on Tom Brady, you're going to have to dial back that screaming. There's really no way around that. You cannot continue to kick it like that. And there will be no excuses, man. They're loaded offensively. Like, their offensive line is probably still a little bit of a work in progress, but they're loaded. They got running backs. They got receivers. They got at least two tight ends, and the third tight end looks like he's Gronk. But he looked kind of finished in that game also. You know, like this, for those two guys, for Brady and Gronk, I hope this worked out the way for y'all that y'all wanted to. You know, you thought you just needed a change of scenery, but it seemed like the change of scenery them boys needed was the crib, the casa, the house. Like, well, let me ask you this. What do you think, Gabe? Let Tampa go 0-3 to start the season. How do you think that go over?
There isn't obviously the same sort of like comfort zone that Brady had before in New England, and the same kind of like, it's everybody else's fault, not Tom's.
Right.
This is a new fan base. So the new fan base has new expectations. They're excited. And if Brady's not playing well, man, there are going to be some disappointed fans down there in shady Tampa, man.
Yeah, well, it's like, how long are they going to be able to go with the, at least he's better than Jameis, right? Because that's what happens. Like, when the black dude leaves and the white dude comes in, the everything that happens is, at least he's better than who the black dude was that left. That happened with Florida State, by the way. They lost that game this weekend to Georgia Tech. And Willie Taggart started trending. But it was like a split between, I thought it was Willie Taggart's fault, and, well, he's still better than Taggart. Like it was just over and over again, he's still better than Taggart. And all you know about this dude is that they lost to Georgia Tech. And you go tell me, Georgia Tech, that's still washing the wishbone off, right? Like, that's all they'll tell you is that. They're like, well, at least you're better than Willie. Y'all don't even know. Y'all just guessing.
Stages of denial.
Yes. Yeah, like, how long can they ride it out with Brady? And you got to remember, again, the Patriots are a polarizing outfit. It ain't going to be that long before people remember they don't actually like him. You know what I mean? This is going to be a thing. What happens in New Orleans if Drew Brees can't get it done? And who knows? Of course, these cats go combined for like 800 yards next week just because I'm out here saying this. But then what? Where do we go? You know? And with Drew, hey, man, them cats ain't forgot. You remember this summer? You remember that?
People forgot about that already.
Yeah, let me tell you who didn't forget. Them dudes that work around him every day. I assure you, it's going to be tense in there on election day. Like, at least most teams get Tuesday off, right? Like, Tuesday is typically the day that you wind up getting off. That's going to be important.
Good thing they're not using the Superdome as the election site, right? All yeah. The Saints down to the Superdome.
Yeah, let me tell you something. I don't think I'm coming to work that week. I'm trying to do some TV on Monday to talk about some football. And then after that, I ain't trying to talk to nobody I don't have to talk to. Ain't no telling how this might go. Like, I might do a podcast with you. I trust you a little more than I trust other people. Ain't no telling what the streets is going to be like on Tuesday. And don't let, oh, Wednesday. Oh, my God. Wednesday, y'all ain't about to see me under any circumstance whatsoever. No, sirree, Bob. Drew Brees ain't going to be trying to do no election interviews on Wednesday either, no matter how it works out.
You know, we could run a taped episode on Thursday.
Yes, yes, yes. Let's find somebody to interview, right? Let's go see if we can get us a Barack Obama interview and put that out there or something. I don't know. No, then that'll wind up being a thing. I don't know. I just know the closer we get to this, nah. Hey, Drew Brees, you just better start completing some passes, baby. Otherwise, New Orleans might catch on fire. You might be, just start completing some passes. And Tom Brady, damn. I personally would be really disappointed if I moved to Tampa, Florida, just to be sorry. I want to give you a little bit of a public service announcement about the NFL season. I kind of want to work in a couple different ideas because I haven't like had a chance yet to talk about the social initiatives that the NFL tried to take on for this season. I'd like to send it first a shout out to what seems to be just about every single white player in the NFL. And I want to thank them for letting me know that it does, in fact, take all of us. Gabe, it seems like it takes all of us is the equality of the NFL. How, like, the white dudes, what is like, how do I do this? Equality, freedom, yeah, justice, yeah, the easy ones, right? It takes all of us seem to be very popular among the white dudes who felt like they had to put something on the back of their helmets. I also sent a shout out to the NFL, though, because the NFL went a place that the NBA did not. The NFL let dudes put actual names of people on the backs of their helmets, like a Naomi Osaka type of situation, you know. So you see a name like Atiana Taylor, I believe her name is, I forget her last name, I could have that wrong, but you know, but like Breonna Taylor and so forth and so on, like they actually let them put their names on there, which I thought was cool. But man, these announcers are not equipped to handle this. You saw what happened when they started booing in Kansas City, and then they threw it to Chris Collinsworth, and he's like, so we support the players, now let's play some football. It never dawned on them that somebody was gonna boo the statement of unity in a moment of silence. Never dawned on them.
Did you anticipate that that was going to happen?
No.
Seems like the most obvious, yet also the most surprising thing at the same time, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it could have been anticipated. This happened in Arizona a couple years ago when the Cowboys and Cardinals knelt before the national anthem. I think the part that probably wasn't anticipated is that it was only like 12,000 people there, and they didn't think it would be loud enough for that to happen. And it was like, and maybe just because nobody else was there and it's so cavernous, you know, but it was like, I didn't even notice it at first. Cause here's what's so funny about that. I wasn't paying attention really. And so I saw them do that lock arms thing. And as I was watching it, I didn't notice that they were booing because I was so busy in my own head thinking about how weak that was. We stand in unity. Yo, I don't need black people to tell me that they stand in unity with white folks. That's not the problem here. The problem here is how we are treated by the nation and how white folks let it happen, right? And so maybe the white folks doing that is some sort of display, but I would actually take more out of a bunch of white dudes with no black people making some statement about their displeasure with the current state of affairs than I am with the we're all in this together kind of rhetoric, right? Like that was my thought. Like I understand they're doing the best they can. They don't know what to do, like all of that stuff, right? But that was my thought. But as I was thinking that, I didn't notice the booing. And it happened fast, and then they cut that off. Like somebody was like, code blue, code blue, code blue. And they hit that button, and they took that out, and then they threw it to Collinsworth, and Collinsworth is like, yo, what am I supposed to do here? You know, like, how am I supposed to make this thing go? And see, the only thing that I could take from that, honestly, is that them people in the crowd are unhappy. Like, that's the only, like, general levels of unhappiness. Y'all just dropped the Super Bowl banner for the first time in 50 years. All the people in that area who wanted to be there that night, you are one of the 12,000 that get to be there. And you are already off the high of the Super Bowl banner being put up to start booing these cats, and they ain't even do nothing. Nothing at all. Now, I tell you who was like, I told you that was going to happen, Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones, like, I tried to explain to you that our fans are not interested in this. You right? Jerry, the one that tried to tell y'all. Maybe that's where it comes from. But no, I mentioned the part about those people being unhappy, because I do think that unhappiness is an important variable when we talk about a lot of things that go on and the ways that people behave. It's a lot of projection of whatever it is that people are feeling right now. And I do think that right now, I mean, we're at a place where people, for reasons that are understandable, are generally unhappy. Not everybody, right? I don't even know if I want to say the majority of the people are unhappy, but it's a lot of really unhappy people out here right now. You know, like life is tough, man. The money's about to get tight. We all sitting here today, all three of us on this joint, we got hoodies on right now. You know what I'm saying? Because it's getting a little chilly outside. The hours of daylight, they're getting thinner. All of this stuff, you know how it goes when the seasons change and everything else. Like people wind up just not really being in great places. And good news is hard to find. I'll be perfectly honest with you, man. Good news is hard to find. Like I admit that I'm not one of those people that just lives and longs for football. You know, like, I just, like, if we didn't have football this year, I would be fine. But I'll admit, man, it was great to have those games on. I really enjoyed having football to watch. And with the NFL, it's not nearly, it doesn't come with the guilt that college is coming with right now. But I really enjoyed and appreciated the fact that we had football games that we were able to watch. It made me feel good. It made me happy, right? But a big part of why those things can make me feel good and those things can make me happy is I don't have like a particular football team that I root for, right? Seeing football made me happy. As many of you know, when I was a younger lad, I used to root for the Atlanta Falcons. And I stopped doing that because they didn't make me happy. In fact, more often, they made me unhappy. They were bad for me. After the quarterback got caught fighting dogs, man, I was just like, I'm not doing this anymore. Why would I participate in this activity? This is nothing. This doesn't bring me any joy. And so I left the Falcons. And hey, the Falcons have been better since then than they have ever been. They even made it to a Super Bowl. They almost made it to another Super Bowl in 2012. They've done that. But what happened when they went to the Super Bowl, Falcons fans? They made you terribly unhappy. They did. They had a 28-3 lead and they blew it. They made you miserable. You'll be hearing about that from the rest of your lives. You'll be hearing about it from Saints fans for the rest of your lives. And that's the worst part. It makes you unhappy. And so I was watching the games on Sunday and I saw that the Cleveland Browns were playing and I saw that Baker Mayfield was stinking it up again. And I just think all you football fans need to ask yourself a question right now in these times. Does my football team make me happy? Like, ask yourself that. Does this football team make me happy? I'm not talking about whether or not football makes you happy, because football itself clearly does. But does this football team make you happy? And you need to ask yourself right now, in these times, do you need something else in your life that makes you unhappy? Is that what you need? And when I ask this question, here's who I am asking specifically. I am asking you, Jets fans, Giants fans, Eagles fans, Bengals fans, Browns fans, Lions fans. Let me say that twice. Lions fans. Is your football team making you unhappy? Because I just don't think that you should be compounding everything else that's going on right now by letting these teams make you unhappy. Now is the time for you to get off that narcotic. Whatever narcotic happens to be your narcotic, it is time for you to ask yourself, is it time for me to get off that narcotic? And look, sometimes the narcotic ain't even a whole team. For example, San Francisco 49ers fans, you've been on that Jimmy Garoppolo narcotic for a while now. You've been trying to tell yourselves how good Jimmy Garoppolo is, or more accurately, trying to tell yourselves Jimmy Garoppolo really isn't that bad for you. That's what you're trying to tell yourself, which I don't know about you guys. That sounds a lot like a narcotic to me. But y'all try to tell yourselves, Jimmy, he's not that bad. He's not that bad for us. We'll be okay with Jimmy. Do you want to do that to yourself? Like, do you want to get invested in these ways? Is that the way that you want to get down? I believe that most of you don't want to live like that. Most of you don't. So if you need some help, you can come holler at me. I developed a program to get myself off the narcotic. I could be the John Lucas of this. That's right. You know how that goes, Gabe? Where, like, now that he plays for the Rockets, it's a little different. But you just be watching a random game. Didn't even matter the sport. The next thing you know, you see John Lucas on the sideline. You'd be like, oh, man, somebody trying to get off a narcotic.
Doesn't John Lucas have, like, a ranch in Texas where all these players go to? Where's your ranch going to be? Because you can't exactly go be hosting all these.
Zoom. My ranch will be on Zoom. That is where my ranch would be. I will help. Look, you have to know when your team makes you unhappy. My buddy Corey Urban, big Browns fan, which don't make no sense because he's from Canada. Like, he ain't even got to do this. First half of the game, he sent me a GIF on the text about how the Browns were making him unhappy. You remember that time when the Browns lost that game where the field goal got blocked and then the Ravens ran it back and that dude ripped off his jersey in the crowd? Like, straight faced, just like that man, right? That particular man. In these times, he can't live like this. It's unfair. Just everybody monitor your own happiness. That's all I'm telling you. And once you recognize that this football team is making you unhappy, change the way that you deal with them. I talked to my buddy Shannon yesterday. He's already out on the Giants. Already.
It took 1 week?
Yeah, like I said, I don't know if it took a week. Like, let me find this text that Shannon sent last night. He said, "We lost to Jacksonville one step closer to Trevor Lawrence. Hashtag win never for Trevor."
Oh, my God. Are you openly advocating for people to embody the Rob Lowe meme? You know what I'm talking about? Where he's just got the blank NFL hat?
Yeah. No. That's what I'm talking about. Because I want y'all to watch this football because, you know, I work here. You dig? Like, I want y'all to do that. Don't get me wrong. I just want you to feel better. I want you to be happy. Have you guys noticed, like, some of y'all been following my work for like 10 years now. Some of y'all been following my work for like 15 years. Some of y'all been following my work at ESPN. In October, it'll be the 10-year anniversary of my first Around the Horn appearance, right? I'm part of the fabric of this place, right? Have you ever noticed how much happier I am than, honestly, damn near all of y'all? Like, have you peeped that? It's because I ain't on that narcotic. I wouldn't feel this way if I was on that narcotic. But I'm off it. I'm good. I'm back. I'm straight. Help me help you. You understand what I'm saying? Help me help you. Because see, Gabe, you too young to remember like when the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were sorry all the time. Like I want to say they had something like 13 or 14 straight years of 10 lost seasons. Like before Tony Dungy came and got that thing right. And then they had Tony Dungy and then they got John Gruden. And then they've been sorry since then. Like after that. And they finally thought that they was going to have something to be excited about. And then Tom Brady come in there and all you hear is click, click. Click, click. You're like, that sounds like a walker. Tom Brady, are you on a walker? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, these things happen. And I imagine that had to be an incredible bummer for you when, you know, when it all goes down in that way. It ain't what you want. And I feel for you. I just don't feel like most Americans right now can handle more disappointment. I just don't believe that we built for that right now. So be aware and ask yourself, do I need to get off this narcotic? And if the answer is yes, let me help you. I'll tell you how to get off that narcotic. And if you can't get yourself off the narcotic, I am going to make you so ashamed of rooting for that sorry team that you'll do it for yourself.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from Tech.
This is Tanya Chen with BuzzFeed News, and I recently wrote about Illinois State University and YouTube taking action against a popular YouTube channel called The Nelk Boys. I wanted to first make a quick disclaimer that even though in my reporting I called them a fratty channel, many of their avid fans have gotten in touch with me to make it very clear that their channel extends beyond fratty culture, and they do all kinds of pranks and pull all kinds of stunts outside of general drinking and partying and being a social nuisance. So I just wanted to let them know that they've been heard. Anyway, the Nelk Boys recently staged a protest in LA against COVID restrictions so that gyms can stay open. Recently, they visited Illinois State University and filmed huge parties that they threw where students were not wearing masks or social distancing. They posted these videos to their Instagram stories where New York Times writer Taylor Lorenz shared them to her Twitter. I reached out to ISU, and they said they were aware of the footage, and they're investigating who was involved, and they plan on handing down consequences, including suspensions for students. YouTube told me that they have suspended the Nelk Boys from their partner program, which just means that they've demonetized their channel for 30 days until they can reapply for the program. But the guys' individual YouTube channels remain up. I guess this is a symbolic gesture for these big institutions to show that they are serious about COVID safety. But time will tell if they are serious and if these messages are getting across.
Look, this story made me think about something, and I feel like we need to start early on this. And Gabe, I don't know how we're going to figure this out if we need to make commercials, but here's the bottom line. You guys ready? Stay your ass home on Halloween. Stay your ass home on New Year's Eve. let's go ahead and get this out of here right now, because I get where people are coming from. And look, people are struggling right now, and they're struggling right now while it's warm outside. What's going to happen when you can't go outdoors, or you can and it's just going to be too much of an issue? People are thirsty for companionship. People are thirsty to see each other. Like, I understand it completely, but man, we ain't never going to get this thing right, man, ever, if y'all don't just stay at home. So like, I'm, you know, they decide to cut them off. I'm kind of okay with that. I got no real beef with that. Go ahead. Make that happen. Needs to be done. Whatever needs to be done. But yo, we got another year of this, and that's if we act right. If we act right, we got another year of this. And that's some real disheartening stuff to consider, man. We've been at the crib game now, what, 6 months?
We went offline in the beginning of March.
We've been in here for 6 months now. We are never going to get free. All we had to do was lock this down for like 6 weeks early, and we'd have been cool. Rest of the world still out here lounging, dog.
Laughing in our faces, too.
Yes.
All right, this next one comes from science.
This is Sarah Kylie Watson, the editorial assistant at Popular Science, and I'm here today to talk about those weird orange skies that you may be seeing on Twitter, or if you live in the Bay Area or along the West Coast, you might be able to see them from right outside your window. So it's a very weird looking thing for sure, but the scientific concept behind it is actually quite simple. So on a normal day, when there's not wildfires raging across the West Coast, the sun's lights get dispersed by particles in the atmosphere, whether it's water or other gases. And what happens is those little itty bitty wavelengths that are blue tend to spread out more than others. And that's what gives our skies that baby blue color that we're used to. But when there is a ton of particles that come from smoke, it's very difficult for those little tiny blue lights to make it through and fill up the sky. So instead, those wavelengths that are bigger, say orange and red, they tend to take full center stage and make the sky that weird orangey red color that we see now. And so it's honestly not that different from what we experience at sunset, except now that it's all day. So during a sunset, the sun is only peeking over just a little bit. So it's going through more layers of atmosphere to get those rays of light to show up on the sky. And so again, those little blue lights, they don't make it through as much because there's just so many layers. But those larger wavelengths, the orange and reds, they do. And they give us our beautiful sunsets of red and orange and pink. But right now in the Bay Area and on the West Coast, we're having all of those particles all the time, which gives us that murky orange weird color. And so not only is this kind of a strange looking thing, but it's also a strange health thing. So smoke from these fires can get into your lungs and cause inflammation and damage to your lining of your lungs. So right now it's probably best to just look at these skies from inside your own home and take care to check on the air quality before you leave your house. Because even though the coloration of the sky is simple science, the effects of pollution on our health is still very, very complicated.
Yo, I just feel like this whole story of the West Coast being on fire is wildly underreported right now. Like, when you talk to people who are out there, them air quality numbers are staggering. We are in the midst of a pandemic involving a disease that affects your respiratory system, and the whole West Coast is on fire. Like, those pictures that I've been seeing and everything else, like, there's going to be a football game canceled at some point, I would imagine, if this keeps up the way it is. Presidents say that California got trees that explode, you know, okay. But where is this going to go? Like, what is this going to be? Would it be different if it was an East Coast story? And then, like, you know, New York City had all these fires going on everywhere, then all of a sudden people would have to talk about it a little bit more. But this is really, really, really bad. And how crazy is the world that that's happening? And honestly, it's a fair question to ask whether or not that should be the number one story.
Yeah, I think you're onto something that, like, this is happening and mostly in an area of the country where things kind of go underreported, or maybe they are not as, like, on the national stage. Like, it's really, really bad in Oregon, and and it's also getting bad in Seattle and even up into Vancouver now. Like, I saw some people were tweeting out that this past weekend, if there was Pac-12 football going on, it would have been canceled because of bad air quality. I also saw there was a game that was played between the A's and the Mariners, and that one of the players was complaining that he had trouble breathing. The air quality index is 200, right? Which is what's safe and what's not safe. So it stops at 200. If you go over 200, it's deemed unsafe and they have to cancel it. But like with the 49ers, they played against the Cardinals. this past weekend, and it was dangerously close to 200.
In Portland, it was up to 400 at a point this weekend.
I saw a reporter tweet out that they slept with their mask on because there's smoke indoors.
It's bananas. It's just the wildest thing in the world that it's happening, and we're just kind of acting like it's not.
And totally normalizing the orange sky thing.
Yes.
The reporter that joined us, like, it's really interesting to hear exactly how that happens because it seems like such a nuts thing. But, like, people were doing drone videos with Blade Runner 2049 music over the top of it, mm-hmm. of San Francisco looking red like that.
Well, I think it's also because the fire part of it is in not heavily populated areas. Like, where it's really, really bad in Oregon is not where the people are. Yeah, so maybe when this gets to where people are, then they're going to have to look at it a little bit differently. But this is a catastrophe, man.
This last one comes from education.
This is Erin Donnelly for Yahoo Life. I recently interviewed Kathy Cluck, who teaches AP US History and AP European History at a high school in Westlake near Austin, Texas. Her school didn't have in-person classes until after Labor Day, and we're doing remote learning at the start of the school year. She figured, why sit at home and teach this class when I could hit the road and actually visit some of the sites that I'm teaching my high school students about? She got permission from her principal and drove up to sites like Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown, the site of the Gettysburg Battle, the site in Weehawken, New Jersey, where Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr famously dueled, to Washington, D.C., the Lincoln Memorial, and then back down through Tennessee to visit some of the civil rights monuments in Memphis. She says she taught from battlefields, from rest stops, from parking lots, using her phone as a hotspot and letting her students sort of figure out where she would be teaching from that day. She's now back home, but says it was a good way to sort of reflect on U.S. history, especially during this time on the heels of the Black Lives Matter protest and the election, just to sort of reflect and teach her students that all these issues are so deeply rooted in history and they still matter today.
Yo, so I have two thoughts on this. One, I am impressed that the woman did all this, right? Like, just put in the effort to do that for her students. I think that's pretty dope. Two, I'm a little surprised that, like, they let her do it, being the school, because I'm assuming that they put some money behind it. But the part of the reason I'm surprised, and Gabe, this ain't going to mean nothing to you, where she's talking about Westlake High School in Austin. That is where Drew Brees went to high school. That is where, I want to say, Nick Foles also went to Westlake. But Westlake is one of them school districts that they started at the dawn of integration so they could keep their own schools to themselves. And Texans have been pretty notorious about, like, the way they handle history and, like, the textbooks and all of that kind of stuff or whatever. So when she talks about going to civil rights sites, you know, and things like that, that's a bolder move from that teacher than I think that people give it credit for. Because teachers around those parts get a lot of emails from parents about you having the nerve to tell them some things that they don't like about what the history of the United States is. Like, that was I thought that was a great idea for her to do, and the places that she went, I just thought was really cool and kind of wanted to highlight that. And also, again, I think that there was a measure of courage that was required for this woman to do this. And I am encouraged by the fact that she decided to go ahead and do it, because, I mean, I'm telling you, man, ain't everybody ready for that. There's going to be you're going to get some stories this year about teachers and the lessons that they decide to use based on everything that's going on in the world, and some revolts from parents who are just not here for actually learning what happened, you know? So props to her.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. So we had a much anticipated event, I would say, happened within this last week with Daniel House getting kicked up out the paint as it pertains to the bubble and violating rules of said bubble. We kind of built people up on the show for something like that to happen, did we not? You were anticipating that something was going to happen, and it inevitably happened.
Yes. I mean, there's no way around it. There was no way around it. And we don't even exactly know what happened.
We don't know exactly what happened. But certainly, it's good enough and hilarious enough to reach out to the listeners of the podcast and have them share when they got kicked up out of the paint, or when someone that they know got kicked up out the paint for whatever reason. The first one comes from JD in Missouri.
Got a funny story about how a couple guys got kicked off a basketball team before. So during the semester break, over winter break, the grades weren't right. So they had these little, like, Microsoft classes you could take, like PowerPoint, Excel, Word, and, you know, easy fixes for your grades. So my guys on the team, like six of them, didn't have their grades together. So we scrambled to get them to classes or whatever. And they turned into work. We had practice after the break, and coaches absolutely incensed when walking the gym. We're going to the gym, like, what's going on? He's like, you effing such and such and such and such. So he goes over. He's like, all of y'all cheated. And they're like, how you figure out we cheated? Woo, woo, woo. And Jazz trying to figure it out in real time. And the assistant coach shows up with all the paperwork from each guy that turned it in. Every guy that turned it in copied it from the same girl, and her name is on the top of every worksheet in three different classes. Six guys got thrown out of the gym that day because they weren't smart enough to change the name at the top of the homework assignments turned in. Like, it was crazy.
Man, the homie JD always got a story, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
He is consistent, and it is greatly appreciated. Everybody turned it in with the same name on the top of the paper.
That is another level of ignorance right there.
Look. Not one of you got hip. Not one. That's the problem. Not one.
Everybody did it at the same time, like they were signing up for voter registration or something.
Yes, yes.
So
yes.
What you got for line four? All right, cool. And what's the name at the top? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Not one of you.
And it didn't register. It didn't register in the time that they were copying that, like, I should probably write my own name on this if I want credit, right?
Nope. Nope. They was in the zone.
All right. This next one, the guy didn't leave his name or where he's from, but I think he was from Cleveland.
The dumbest thing that I ever got kicked out of was a few years back. My friend got really, really, really good tickets to a Cavs game. And him and his family brought me to the game with him. This is at the height of the social media retweet to do something. And I thought it would be a good idea to say, give me 100 retweets and I'll smack Drew Gooden's headband off. It was really dumb, I know, but I did it anyway. Soon, a whole bunch of security guards were looking at me and my friend and decided they were going to kick us out of the game. This is like the middle of the second quarter. And yeah. I told the security guards, kick me out. It was me. I was dumb. And I had to watch the Cavs game from a hairy buffalo instead of with my friend who got us really, 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 really good tickets. So, yeah, that was really dumb.
Yo, so was his friend in on the plan? Because if I'm the friend and I spent the money on the tickets, no, we not going to do this.
What's unclear, though, is whether or not said friend also got kicked out or if it was just him. Sounds like it was just him.
Yes, because I feel like we would have heard more about said friend's reaction to this.
Yes, but Drew Gooden, man, a blast from the past, right?
Yes.
Not still in the league, Drew Gooden, for sure. That's that long ago. But Drew Gooden was kind of a nice dude.
Yeah, he seemed. He also did weird hair stuff. Remember when he do the thing where he had the hair at the back and nowhere else?
Yeah, the little ducktail.
Except it wasn't little.
Yeah, it was kind of whack.
It was the most.
I'd be interested to see a picture of Drew Gooden from this time and see if he had that ducktail. Maybe he was just kind of, he puts a target on his back, like, I'm going to whack his headband off because he's got the ducktail going.
Yeah, I also feel like he's lucky Drew Gooden didn't kick his ass. Let's not forget that part.
Oh, my gosh. All right, this last one. This is an unbelievable story. And I wasn't sure if I was actually going to play it, but I think when you hear it, you will be shocked.
I got a bad one for you. This was about 8-9 years ago. I was letting one of my homeboys, he was crashing with me. And me and my girl were living together. We had an extra bedroom. He stayed with me for like 6 months, like rent free food, had his own bedroom, beachfront condo, living the life, living good. No job, wasn't bringing nothing to the table, free pass. There was a 2-day period where me and my girl, each one of us, caught this fool drinking off in public spaces in the apartment within a 2-day period. One time he was standing in the bathroom jerking off. My girl caught him. The other time I went and dropped my girl off at work, I came back in the house. I opened the door and he's standing in front of my desk, my computer where I work at, looking at like a still picture jerking off in the living room. And the third time, the second bedroom was my girl used to use it as a closet. She used the closet in their room. She knocked on the door. She didn't think he was home. She knocked on the door. He didn't say anything. She opened the door, and he was in the closet jerking off. This shit happened 3 times in 2 days, and I had to kick him the f*** out.
3 times in 2 days?
Unbelievable story. Unbelievable.
How do you get caught 3 times in 2 days? And on the day, it happened twice. I guess it's because he got interrupted, right? He had to get to 3 times in 2 days. 3 times in 2 days.
His homeboy.
Yes, yes. And you know what that means? I don't know where he wound up next, but I know the first thing he did when he got in there, like, hey, man, where the bathroom? Hey, excuse me right fast. Hands a little ashy. Y'all got some lotion? Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Do this thing a couple times a week. Gabe Bassan and Christina Buswell handing everything behind the scenes. Thank you, guys. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thank you to Tanya Chen of BuzzFeed. Check out her story about YouTube demonetizing influencers for encouraging people to ignore COVID safety. Thanks to Sarah Kylie Watson of Popular Science. Check out her story explaining why the wildfires are making the skies turn red. And thanks to Erin Donnelly of Yahoo for her story on a teacher in Texas getting on the road to give some virtual lessons to the kids. Very good story. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.